The following debate on the subject of slow-growth ballot initiatives was held in the fall of 1989 on the campus of the University of California in Irvine.
The formal title of our evening's interactions is The Political, Economic, and Concrete Implications of Slow-Growth Initiatives, with a focus on Orange County and its current proposal. The evening is sponsored by a group named Students for Community Awareness of Slow Growth Initiatives. They've done a very fine job in organizing this educational forum. My name is Joe Demento. I'm a professor here at UCI in the program in social ecology. I will be introducing the debate, the debaters, and I will be moderating, if not modulating, their presentation. The rules of the debate are procedural rather than substantive. That is, the debaters will address the topic according to their own interpretations of what is fair game. I will only hold them to the time limits and rules of common decency. Before I introduce our presenters, the current proposal referred to in the debate's title is the Citizens' Sensible Growth and Traffic Amendment and Ordinance Initiative. Orange County citizens will be voting on the initiative in June. I'm not going to attempt to describe the provisions of the proposed law. There will be future forums on its meaning and impact here at UCI. But I will state the summary provided in the initiative itself. It reads, the Board of Supervisors shall approve new development only where resulting traffic will not cause or make worse an unacceptable level of traffic, and the Board shall provide adequate capacity on all arterials. The Board shall provide adequate public safety, flood control, and parks within the unincorporated areas of Orange County, and maintenance and staffing for said infrastructure before approving new development. Our debate will be about 1 hour. We will begin with opening statements by each gentleman. A rebuttal period will follow, a second rebuttal period, and then short closing statements. We will then have a break of about 5 minutes. After that, we will entertain your questions. Now, if I might introduce the debaters. In advance, I wish to thank them for their generosity with their time in helping us to understand this important public policy issue. Opposing slow growth initiatives and speaking first is Dr. George Reisman, who is professor of economics at Pepperdine University. He is the author of the book, The Government Against the Economy. Professor Reisman received his doctorate under Ludwig von Mises and has translated the economist's book, Epistemological Problems of Economics. Supporting the initiatives is Ray Catalano, professor of social and ecology and management at UC Irvine and a member of the Irvine City Council. Professor Catalano received his PhD in economics at the Maxwell School, and he is the author of the book, Health, Behavior, and the Community. Professor Reisman, would you please begin with a statement of around 15 minutes?
Professor Demento, my distinguished opponent, Professor Catalano, ladies and gentlemen, good evening. I am here to oppose the so-called slow growth initiative that will come before the voters of Orange County this June, and all other slow growth or anti-growth measures. One major reason that I am opposed to the Orange County measure in particular is that I believe that the anti-growth philosophy is itself the cause of the very serious traffic problem for which the slow growth initiative is now being advanced as the solution. Our problem of traffic congestion is the result of too little growth of the highway system. We are paying the price for the anti-growth philosophy of the Brown administration and its less is better, small is beautiful doctrine. Under the influence of such ideas, the state of California has fallen from the nation's leader in highway construction to last place in terms of per capita highway spending, a position it has held since 1975. In the 1960s, the state constructed an average of 100 miles of new highway per year. In the 1980s, it has constructed an average of only 10 miles of new highway per year. In Orange County specifically, only 2 miles of new freeway have been built in the last 16 years. And even now, at the very same time that the Slow Growth Initiative is advanced as the solution for the traffic crisis, opponents of growth continue to come out and actually oppose road building. The most glaring case of this kind is the strident opposition to the widening of the Laguna Canyon Road, where it is claimed that the canyon must be saved. Another significant and very recent case appears to be the insistence of the mayor of Irvine, Larry Agron, that the San Joaquin Hills Corridor, now under construction in Orange County, be only a 4 to 6 lane road rather than the major freeway sought by developers. It even appears that one of the effects of the Slow Growth Initiative itself will be to jeopardize approximately $1 billion worth of highway and road construction in Orange County. The tears the slow growth movement sheds over the traffic crisis are crocodile tears. Its underlying philosophy is as much opposed to the construction of the highways that would have prevented the crisis, and even now would overcome it, as it is opposed to the construction of the houses on which it blames the crisis. The philosophy of the slow growth movement is anti-development, period. It is anti-houses, anti-roads, anti-just about anything that is man-made. It stands in awe of something it calls nature, which it regards as having intrinsic value and as sacred, and which it believes man profanes by his exploitation. I totally oppose this philosophy, which I regard as hostile to human well-being and even to human life. I further oppose the initiative because, if enacted, it would constitute a violation of the internal freedom of migration in the United States. Indeed, that is its avowed purpose. It wants to solve the traffic problem, not by the obvious, sensible method of building highways, but by keeping outsiders out of the county, by means of depriving them of places to live in the county. Its formula is fewer new houses, fewer new outsiders, fewer additional cars on the roads. This is a violation of individual freedom. Just as freedom of speech means the ability to speak without being stopped by the government, and freedom of the press means the ability to publish without being stopped by the government, so the freedom of migration means the ability to migrate without being stopped by the government. For most of our history, the United States respected the freedom of the right of everyone to the freedom of migration. Down to the 1920s, we had freedom of immigration. That meant foreigners were welcome to our shores in whatever numbers they cared to come. The slow growth initiative being proposed for Orange County and all other such slow growth measures are an unprecedented attempt to restrict the freedom of migration of American citizens within the territory of their own country. This is what I mean by a violation of the freedom of internal migration. And incidentally, you should realize that in the process, the Slow Growth Initiative is also an attempt to deprive Americans of their right to representative government. People in Illinois, New York, Kansas, and the rest of the country are to be deprived of their right to move to Orange County without even having a voice in the matter. It will not even be the United States Congress that decides the issue, which, while being no less a travesty of constitutional prerogatives, would at least give all Americans a say in the matter. It will just be the voters of Orange County. Now, I am not saying that the slow growth measure presently contemplated for Orange County, or anywhere else in the United States for that matter, will establish a border police like the Immigration and Naturalization Service, or that it will require the use of internal passports, as is the case in Soviet Russia, where Russian citizens need special permission to move to the relatively more desirable places like Moscow and Leningrad. No. The present measure will violate the freedom of Americans to move by violating the freedom of landowners and builders to provide them with housing and workplaces. And like any violation of freedom and individual rights, it will entail the initiation of physical force against victims who have committed no real crime. Think about it. What will make the builders stop building? What will make them pay attention to the initiative and obey its terms if it's enacted? Isn't it the threat that if they don't, then armed sheriff's deputies will be sent out to close them down, to arrest them and bring them before judges who will have the power to fine and even imprison them? I don't think it's right to send armed policemen against builders and construction workers for the alleged crime of building. You know, there's a great deal of talk nowadays about the escalating level of violence in our society and about the need for gun control. I think there's a lot of truth in this talk, but I think most of it misses the main aspect of this violence. The most dangerous violence any society faces is not that of vicious or crazed private individuals, but that of its own government against unarmed citizens. Nowadays, in our country and any other country which is not a dictatorship, this violence is unleashed democratically. People who would not dream of reaching for a gun and trying to force their will on someone else if they had to act as private individuals believe that if they band together in a pack large enough to constitute a majority of the voters, they are free to do anything. To speak to the case in point, they believe that if they can get the government to do it for them, they have the right to use guns to prevent others from doing such things as building houses on the open vistas they have decided give them more aesthetic pleasure than the sight of the houses. They don't see that if they have the government use force to impose their will for them, it's still using force to impose their will, and still just as wrong. If such a thing as the sight of open vistas is so important to someone that it far outweighs the real and very substantial advantages of larger population, then the proper solution for him is to move to where there are open vistas, or whatever else he values that depends on the presence of fewer people. It is not to pull a gun in order to keep other people out. Yet the very fact that the slow growth initiative is on the ballot represents a gun pointed at the head of the builders. There is more to say against the initiative. It is monopoly legislation. It wants to give a monopoly of the real estate market essentially to already developed real estate, and to forcibly exclude from the market presently undeveloped real estate. If enacted, the effect will be higher prices for already developed real estate and a sharp reduction in the value of undeveloped real estate. It will be higher rents as well as house prices. Outsiders able and willing to pay these prices and rents will be able to move here. But to the extent they do, people already here will have to leave. They will be driven out by the high housing prices and rents established by the more intense competition for the forcibly restricted supply of real estate. Thus, the effect of the initiative will be forced resettlement as well as restricted immigration. The largest group forced to resettle will be the children of today's Orange County residents. It should be realized that over half of Orange County's population growth is now the result of new babies being born within the county. As it becomes time for these children to go out on their own, they will find that they cannot afford a place to live in Orange County. The situation could very likely be worse than this. We should not expect that the slow growth advocates will succeed only in Orange County. Indeed, they are busy trying to organize on a statewide basis. And if they do succeed in Orange County, both the precedent of the initiative's passage and the consequent effect of still more people moving into neighboring counties as a substitute for living in Orange County will fuel similar anti-growth movements there. The logic of the situation is a statewide freeze on new development. And the logic of that is pressure on neighboring states to do the same. Once underway, each new area that restricts growth places added pressure on other areas to restrict it. Precedent becomes a fashion that is fueled by the fact that the influx of outsiders into every remaining open territory is increased by the restrictions elsewhere. The ultimate effect of the slow growth movement, if allowed to proceed, could well be that adequate affordable housing simply does not exist anywhere, or at least not anywhere that very many people want to live. All we shall have succeeded in doing is depriving ourselves of housing. In the long run, almost no one can gain from the slow growth initiative or any other anti-growth measure. The construction industry is only the most obvious of its victims. Every businessman will be deprived of the benefits of a more rapidly growing market. Those businesses which have been established in anticipation of economic growth which has not yet materialized may actually fail if the initiative is enacted. Every wage earner will be deprived of the benefits of the competition of a larger number of employers for his particular skills. Everyone in his capacity as a consumer will be deprived of the benefits of a growing market capable of supporting an ever-widening range of specializations in fields ranging from shops and restaurants to medicine and the arts. But slow growth will not mean merely a slowing down of growth. It will result in vast segments of actual economic decline as many businesses and workers are pushed out by rising housing costs and land values. To the extent the initiative results in rising housing costs and land values in Southern California relative to housing costs and land values elsewhere in the country, it will place Southern California businesses at a competitive disadvantage. They will have to pay higher wages than businesses elsewhere in order to compensate their workers for the higher cost of housing, and they will incur higher real estate costs of their own. But they will not be able to pass on their higher costs to their customers who can buy from firms elsewhere. They will simply be made less profitable, and many of them will have to relocate. Businesses dependent on the patronage of these businesses or on the patronage of the employees of these businesses will also suffer. These results may very well satisfy some of the slow growth advocates who will then have the presence of fewer people and the sight of less material prosperity to trouble them. But it will not be a happy outcome for the victims.
I don't do many things well, but I can keep the time. You will have 7 minutes and 15 minutes to rebuttal. And I now introduce again Professor Catalano for his 15-minute opening statement.
Thank you, Professor Demento, Bruce and Bob and the other organizers of the event tonight. And thank you, Professor Reisman, for joining us. Let me say first that there are two issues that the title of tonight's event suggests we need to address, or two questions we should try to provide answers for. One question is it a wise thing for local governments to do, to use their regulatory power, principally their land use regulatory power, to try to stop growth because growth changes the nature of their communities? The second question is, does the initiative on the ballot in Orange County in June fall into the category of the use of public regulatory power to stop growth for the simple purpose of stopping growth? So two very different questions. I think one is a very difficult one to answer, which is the first one, and one is very easy to answer, which is the second. Let me just talk briefly about the first, because after all, we could spend hours and days talking about the first question of whether local government should use its regulatory power to try to constrain growth simply because growth seems to be a threat to the community as known by existing residents. I think in answering that question, you have to consider areas of concern. For the purposes of this discussion tonight, I'm going to separate those areas of concern into legal concerns, economic concerns, and political concerns, because after all, that reflects the title you were asked to speak to. I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not going to spend much time talking about the legal concerns. But if any local government were considering using its regulatory power to stop growth simply because it believes that growth is bad for it for some reason, I would suggest that they'll probably find themselves in severe legal trouble. For many reasons, the courts in this country have historically said that the use of the regulatory power by local government must be to further some health, safety, or welfare end, not simply to stop growth because you are afraid of growth or change. And so any local government that says, I want to stop growth, period, or put a cap on of 50 units or 100 units or 500 units a year or a month or every 10 years, is going to have a very difficult time, I think for good reasons, getting a court to endorse that should it be challenged. The courts have said, and those of you who are lawyers can correct me if I'm wrong, but in general, the courts have said that if local government is going to use its regulatory power, its police power, to in fact inhibit the conversion of raw land to something more intense, that it has to have some record, some legislative discussion, or some indication that there's a possibility of an adverse health, safety, or welfare outcome of that development. You have to show some human cost that in fact would justify the use of that power. So while I share Professor Reisman's concern that if you simply leave people to indulge their fears of change and growth, you may end up with some wild and mad and inappropriate constraints, in this country, thank goodness, it would be very difficult to have those stand because of the test the courts have created for us. The second set of concerns are economic. That is, presuming that a local government could, in fact, demonstrate that the reason it wants to control its growth or conversion of land, it should ask itself, is this a prudent thing to do from an economic perspective? After all, we all want vibrant economies that allow us and our children to have opportunities for upward mobility. Well, of course, that depends upon the cost that you're regulating and the cost you'll incur through the regulation. If what you're trying to avoid in terms of health and behavioral cost is judged to be a quantity or an effect on people that, in fact, is worth foregoing the economic benefits of further growth, then the local government should regulate it. That, of course, is a very difficult calculation to do because the costs and the benefits of that kind of regulation usually aren't expressed in equivalent kinds of units. We don't know, for example, what the economic cost would be if the initiative were passed in Orange County, for example. We're not even sure, really, of what benefits there will be if you had to quantify them in dollars. So while the logic of economics suggests you don't do anything that's going to cost you more than you've saved, the fact of the matter is that implementing that logic can't be done without the introduction of human judgment, and that brings me to the third area, which is politics, because after all, it's the political institutions of this country that decide when costs outweigh benefits or when intervention is worth the benefits. So when I look at the politics of trying to stop growth for its own sake, I would suggest that there are very few places in this country where a politician could stand up and say, I want to stop growth simply for the sake of stopping growth. I don't believe that politician could survive the test of politics. They wouldn't survive. They would not be elected. They would not be re-elected. In fact, we find ourselves in a very peculiar situation here in Orange County. We sit here tonight debating whether or not we would like to have Orange County grow. I don't think that's what our initiative does for the sake of this discussion, the issues raised by Professor Reisman. Let's presume that this initiative would stop growth. It's a very peculiar situation to have a local government debating whether or not they want to stop growth. I would suggest there are no more than 10 or 15 or 20 in all of the state that would debate that. And probably the state of California and very few others are likely to even have that debate. In fact, I know many jurisdictions across this country, the majority of them, would love to have some of the capital investment that may be deflected from Orange County. So we're talking about relatively few communities that have a situation in which people would even discuss stopping growth. I would further suggest that if you look at the history of land use politics in this country and in California, what you will discover is that during the overwhelming majority of that time, the politics of land development were not at all controlled by fuzzy-headed no growth people, but in fact controlled very much by the land use interests, the land development interests. That's not my inference, that's the inference of decades and decades of case studies looking at the behavior of local government. It has responded primarily over the years to the needs, the perceived needs of the development community. So I don't fear runaway government somehow taking away the rights of developers. It simply hasn't been the case historically. They're protected by courts, and they're protected by, I think, by good economic logic. I don't see that there will be many cities, either in California or America, that will in fact be allowed either by the courts or by their constituents to say, we want no growth simply because we're afraid of growth. What is more likely to happen, and in fact what is happening, this brings me to my second question, whether what's being proposed in Orange County is an attempt to stop growth. What is more likely to happen and what is happening is that in many suburban areas of growing metropolitan areas, of economically vibrant metropolitan areas, there is a difficult problem where the effects of development are outrunning local government's ability to provide infrastructure. Whether you like it or not, there simply is not capacity on the road system of Orange County, for example, and on the road systems of many, many suburban jurisdictions and growing areas of this country to handle the growth that landowners would like to have. There isn't the capacity. Now the problem is, what do you do about that? Professor Reisman and others have suggested that we, in fact, build more roads. And I would offer to you, in fact, hope to demonstrate that that's exactly what the initiative in Orange County is intended to do. But before we indulge in that conversation, let me just offer that there's another logical alternative other than building roads. And that, of course, is constraining demand for those roads. That's not the course that, in fact, has been set or proposed in the Orange County Initiative. The Orange County Initiative is very straightforward, despite all the characterization of it as highly complex. That initiative does two things. Two important things. It says that if you want to develop in this county and have an impact on a road system that is level of service C or better, that is, an impact on a road system that's functioning with the amount of traffic for which it was designed, fine, this initiative doesn't affect you at all. If, however, you want to build someplace in this county where, in fact, you will have impacts on a road system that is functioning below the level for which it was designed, that is carrying more cars than for which it was designed, in order for you to go forward, one of three things has to occur. Either you, meaning the developer, has to make some investment so that when you're done with your project, the road system will run measurably better than it did before you started, which does not mean it has to be brought up to level of service C. Or number two, the County of Orange has to create a funding district into which you contribute, a funding district which in turn would create an improved road system that would allow the road system to improve, which means a payment into a system, which is what we have, for example, in the 3rd Supervisorial District here in Orange County. On third, you have to contribute to a traffic management organization, one which in fact moves cars off the peak hour, changes the hours of work so that the road system can function, or encourages people to enter into vanpool arrangements or into other kinds of shared transportation. The initiative also says that if a project is proposed in an area in which emergency services, police and fire, can't meet an 8-minute or a 5-minute response time, I'm not sure the exact amount of time, that you have to, in fact, improve the system in that area so that that response time can be met. It also says that you have to make provisions so that the runoff from your project is held back so that the overall flood situation in the area doesn't exceed a situation that's considered dangerous, and that there has to be sufficient park in place to, in fact, meet county standards. I don't see that as saying no growth at all. I see that setting the standards under which growth and development should occur. And fact, the road standard, for those of you who don't know, rather than being some impossible hurdle, is in fact the standard that the Orange County General Plan supposedly has implemented for the last decade, but never done. Level of service C is in the Orange County General Plan as the level of service that would supposedly be achieved upon implementation of that plan. The police service is in fact the exact same level of service that surrounding communities such as Irvine are able to meet. Police and emergency service. Flood control standard is in fact the standard that's in place in many existing cities in Orange County. And the park service is in fact below that, the exact in some cities in Orange County. So the notion that in fact the standards that are being applied here are really an attempt to stop development is simply not true. We're asking the county to take seriously the standards it has in fact told us it was going to live by for the last 10 or 15 years. So if one holds the Orange County initiative to the three standards of is it legal? While I'm no judge and jury, I'd have to believe that at least is apparently addressing the issue of trying to protect health, safety, and welfare under the standards the county has in fact embraced for a long time. Is it economically prudent? My suggestion is that it is. What it really says is that the developers, right, have to incur the cost of bringing the system up to that level which the people who live in Orange County have the right to define. And that cost will, of course, be passed on to the consumers where it belongs in any market system. And is it politically saleable? I suggest that if you look at the polls, it suggests that Orange County people support this initiative. However, if you tell them that it's simply and only a no-growth initiative that it stops all growth, they won't support it. So I don't believe it's economically viable or politically viable in Orange County to say there will be no growth. I do, however, think it's both economically and politically viable to say that new development in Orange County ought to live up to a reasonable standard of performance. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Catalano. We're trying to get the debaters to get increasingly efficient in their language because the next period of time is 7 minutes. I haven't set up the rules, but we get down to 3 minutes and then 1 minute. Professor Reisman, 7 minutes.
Thank you. All right. Professor Catalano holds that this initiative is not for the purpose of stopping growth. The anti-growth people are a very small, insignificant minority. I understand him to say that the real purpose is for dealing with a serious, legitimate local problem. But that problem has been created by the anti-growth minority, and the effect of this legislation will be to stop growth. Now, it will not stop all growth. The initiative exempts single lot development, fourplexes. It will stop the major serious growth, the major developments of thousands of houses at a time. Now, I think it's a major equivocation to argue that this initiative will create road building by forcing the developers to provide roads. Our problem of roads is not the local feeder roads, the avenues, things of that kind. It is the freeways. There is nothing in this initiative that addresses the problem of the freeways. As a matter of fact, the initiative says it recognizes that the highway problem is beyond the power of the county government to solve. How are the builders going to solve that problem? There is no way. What will happen is we'll be told, we'd love to allow you to build your project. We're waiting for level C of service to be achieved or whatever. They might as well also add a provision, we're waiting for the budget to be balanced. It will not happen. An emergency created by the no growth philosophy is being used to hoodwink the great majority of people who are in favor of economic development, who are reasonable, and they are being led to support this proposal in the belief that it will solve a problem. It will not solve the problem. If anything, it will make the problem worse. It will cut off funds, and as a matter of fact, if this initiative is enacted and if somehow it were confined just to Orange County, it would materially worsen the freeway congestion. We have a great deal of vacant office space in Orange County. Housing costs will go up in Orange County. More people will then have to live outside the county, commute into the county. We'll have a worse problem than we do now. The only solution for the traffic problem is more highways.
Now, it's true, this problem has gotten beyond the local governments, beyond the state government. Not of necessity, but by their ineptitude. What we should be out to do is to radically change what our state and local governments are doing. Total government spending per capita in California, state spending, has increased 62% in real terms, over and above inflation. Each of us is paying 62% on average more than we paid 20 years ago. That money is not going into freeways. We spend vastly less on freeways than we did in the past. The money is going into the educational system, where most of it is being wasted. And I can attest to that from personal experiences. I read essay exams from students with my vocabulary. Now, the government is capable of doing its job. We need to have about $3 billion a year more highway spending in California for the next 20 years. And I can tell you exactly where to get it without raising taxes one single penny. And that's to take it straight off the education budget. Let the education budget be reduced to teaching the students what it should be teaching: reading, writing, arithmetic, science, mathematics, history, English. Eliminate everything else. We'll have enough money to build highways and probably finance a tax reduction. That would be the appropriate thing for the government to do. The problem is the government does not have proper priorities. It's being run by pressure group politics, and the people are being tossed to the wolves. Our problems are being blamed on developers. It's not developers. There are people from all over the country who want to move here. They will be stopped from moving. Now, an important point which I would like to make that I thought I would have been able to make in my positive presentation, under the head of no gainers from no growth legislation, is that even homeowners whose property appreciates as the result of being given a monopoly will suffer. As I've indicated, the reduction in building will result in a deepening housing crisis that will be added on to the traffic crisis. Try to imagine the complaints that will be voiced in the future if the initiative is enacted about the spiraling cost of housing and about how little space people must live in. Can anybody believe that in that environment there will not be demands for rent controls and controls on the price of houses? And that will be advocated in the name, are we in favor of government controls? Oh no, it's necessary to deal with an emergency. How did this emergency occur? We don't know, it just happened. It happened, it will happen because of what we're doing now. We need to avoid that emergency. Now, we have rent controls not very far from here. There will be new political opportunists to cash in on the housing crisis that we'll be building. And those of you who've had any economics, I would ask you to recall a principle I hope you've learned, that price controls, including rent controls, create shortages, and shortages lead to rationing. You might try to think of the implications of that in connection with housing. Now, what I have done, I think, is presented you with a philosophic and economic analysis of the Slow Growth Initiative. I've shown that the philosophy behind the initiative is the cause of the traffic crisis, and that if anything, the initiative will worsen it. I've shown that the initiative is a threat to the internal freedom of migration, a point not at all answered, it's not his turn to have answered, a threat to the internal freedom of migration, and an abrogation of the right of Americans to representative government. I've shown that it's tantamount to people reaching for a gun in order to impose their will on others, that it's monopoly legislation that will raise the cost of housing, reduce the standard of living, drive out business, and ultimately be of economic benefit to no one. If you value your rights and freedom as Americans and your material prosperity as well, you will vote against this initiative and urge everyone you know to vote against it and not be fooled by any claims of emergencies or any problems of governments having to solve isolated local problems. There is our fundamental freedom is at stake in this initiative. Thank you.
I'm surprised to hear that the anti-growth or slow growth movement is the cause of our problem in Orange County. I'll just give you a bit of history. In 1980, the Orange County Board of Supervisors, and they would be very surprised if they were told there were no growth, but let's hold that aside. The Orange County Board of Supervisors in 1980 asked a very reputable engineering firm to take a look at the general plan that Orange County had then and the other cities in the area south of the 55 freeway. And they asked a very simple question. If all of us built out our plans as we now have them, what sort of road system would we need to have and at what price to have us have the same average trip time that we have in 1978 and 1979? Well, PPQ&D, Parsons, Brinckerhoff, Quaid, and whoever is a very good engineering firm, one of the largest in the country, went off and did the analysis, and they came back and said, look, if you implement the general plan as it existed then, what you will discover is that you'd have to spend $20 billion, $20 billion between 1980 and the year 2000 to have a road system which is 80% as efficient as it is now, meaning 1978. Or you'd have to spend $20 billion. After you've spent that, the average trip would take 20% longer than it now takes. Now, I would suggest to Professor Reisman and others of you who believe that it's, in fact, the no-growth movement that led us to our current situation. Think about those numbers. If the state of California spent all the money that Governor Duke Major and other governors might have wanted to spend, all of it would not have spent $20 billion between then and the end of the century. And it would not have spent it in Orange County alone. After all, there are other parts of California. So if the Orange County Board of Supervisors implemented the general plan as it stood then, there wasn't enough money in California to solve the road problem. You couldn't have built all the roads that were necessary. In face of that piece of information, is it not a reasonable question to ask of our Board of Supervisors, perhaps we should scale back our intentions to build, since we can't possibly get the money from either local or state sources to build the road system we would need? I think that's a reasonable question. Professor Reisman talks about a series of processes through which we start from asking a reasonable question of whether or not we have enough money anywhere in the state of California to provide enough roads to meet everybody's demand for development approvals in Orange County. Somehow asking that question will lead us surely and inevitably to rationing. Well, first of all, I think nature has done a very good job rationing land, and there's only so much of it. As the old line goes, no one's making any more of it. And I would suggest to you that whether you, in fact, end up with rationing by local government or by nature, at some point you've run out of land. And the question obviously raises, do we wait until we've reached the point where the market, because there simply is no land left, before it, in fact, judges this no longer a reasonable place to invest? Or do we try to keep, or in fact, preserve something of what it is we now believe is good about this county? The question also has been raised here that, in fact, in a comment that I hope Professor Reisman didn't mean seriously, that Larry Agrin, who I presume he knows as a colleague of mine in the city council, is somehow a no-growth person, and deep in his heart, he harbors the hope to close down all development. Well, I would suggest that Professor Reisman, and others of you who believe that, simply check the historic record. Mayor Agrin and myself and others who've been called no-growthers in the city of Irvine have, in fact, implemented the Irvine General Plan on the schedule that the people of Irvine adopted. But implementing it, Irvine is not a no-growth community. We have tried to implement standards for development similar to those that we're asking the county to adopt. I would argue that some of our predecessors who controlled the city council before, who were hardly no-growth persons, allowed development to get ahead of infrastructure, which is what I believe the County Board of Supervisors has done in Orange County, and now we're trying to catch up. As far as the freedom to migrate goes, of course, this is the classic boogeyman of anybody, of all the folks who want to claim that any use of the market to do anything in land use is going to lead to some hideous use of the public police power to keep us from doing what we want. I don't believe that's true. My suggestion is that the courts of this country are well equipped to preclude that from happening, since that's not allowed under our constitution. And if what we're doing here or proposing in Orange County at all smacks of that, I'm sure it will be struck down. I don't believe that's going to be a problem. Of course, the other issue he raises, which is an important one, we're all having kids, and much of our growth would be internal. Now I ask Professor Eastman and all of you, if you use the simple math that was introduced here, because we're having children who want to live here, and they'll have children who want to live here, and you make the presumption that they all want to live in Orange County, despite the fact that many of them say they want to leave because of the nature of the bad development here. But let's presume they all didn't want to stay. If they all want to stay, then of course arithmetically you arrive at Orange County having populations that are enormous. Now, do you suggest we're going to support in Orange County the indefinite geometric increase in population that would be produced by that kind of logic? I suggest not. We simply couldn't do that even if we wanted to do it. So obviously people are going to have to migrate at some point. And I believe that the people who will migrate are those who find that what we've done in Orange County is not up to their standards. It's either too urban, or not urban enough, or too smoggy, or too noisy, or not smoggy, or not noisy enough. Really? Let me also add that I find it amazing. I find it absolutely amazing that someone would come here and argue that this initiative is going to increase the price of housing in a way that the good development community for years has been trying to avoid. Orange County is a terrible affordability problem. And believe me, there's no county in the country that's been more pro-growth than Orange County. Thank you.
The next statement will be 5 minutes from each professor.
I hope I haven't been misunderstood to try to say that the supervisors of Orange County are anti-growth. I've never said that. I've said that the Brown administration was anti-growth. A number of times, Professor Catalano has said, don't worry, we can't pass really disastrous legislation in the United States. The courts will protect us. So if there anything really wrong with this initiative, the courts would strike it down. If you're going to count on that, you'd better think twice. Just today, the Supreme Court struck down what had been taken as a constitutional protection against the taxation of interest on state funds. Land has been seized by the government of Hawaii and redistributed to other individuals. That has been allowed to stand. The Supreme Court, any court, is capable of interpreting night as day and day as night. The only price of liberty, the only guarantee of liberty is what Jefferson said, eternal vigilance by the people. You have to act when you have the opportunity, and this is a measure that we must strike down. It may be true that it will cost $1 billion a year for 20 years now to bring Orange County's roads into proper shape, possibly so. If so, that will largely be the result of the fact that in the last 16 years, we've only built 2 miles of new freeway. The government of California has not been working hard to develop the freeway system. Transportation was 13% of the state budget in 1966. The amount of spending scheduled for highways will be 77%, or is currently 77% of what it is, of what it was in 1966. Caltrans' latest annual report says the state government of California, for all practical purposes, has abandoned capital spending in connection with highways. That means new construction. Now, the fact that we might have a 20% longer trip rate, even if that were true, which I will not accept, but if that were true, that does not follow that therefore we should do nothing and have to choose either between waiting hours and hours or taking a long step toward a police state. Which brings me to the issue of land rationing. It's true there's only so much land, but we are only using a bare fraction, and the problem here is we are being prevented from using highly desirable land that we could use. Now, it might be at some point in the 23rd century, if all descendants of Orange Countyans wanted to continue to live here, they would then definitely have to move. But that is not an issue which requires that people be forced out now against their will when the very real opportunity is present for them to live here. Now, let me make a major distinction between rationing by nature, in the sense that there's only so much land. There is only so much land, but vastly more than we are presently able to use, and rationing by the government. I've pointed out that price control and rent control lead to rationing. Remember the gasoline lines? Everyone had the money. First, there's a problem. The product is too expensive. The government will solve that crisis by making it cheaper. Then everyone can afford it. The only problem is there is a limited supply, and there's not enough then to go around. So there's a shortage. Well, what will local government rationing mean if we have a housing shortage? Picture people looking for housing the way they were looking for gasoline. There are no ads for housing in the newspapers. You go from door to door. Do you have a room to rent? No. Now, what's going to happen? There'll be people complaining to City Hall. I need a place to live. I can't live in the street. What will our geniuses then think of? Well, they'll go around and take a survey. How many bedrooms do you have in this house? How many people are living here? Could you use a border? Don't think that that's beyond the realm of possibility. That's an ultimate crisis. That's rationing by local government. That's quite a difference between, quote, rationing by nature, unquote. And if we had a severe enough housing crisis long enough, that would be the ultimate, an ultimate stopping point. So please let us not confuse rationing by nature with rationing by government. It's a very different thing. All right, in conclusion here, the fact that the state government has failed to meet the needs that it is supposed to meet should not be regarded as an excuse for now taking on added powers and stopping the developers. The government has assumed the responsibility for road building. Its job is to fulfill it. Now, I don't think the government is the best party to do that. An excellent bill was introduced by Assemblyman Frizzell, calling for the establishment of a private toll road. The San Joaquin Corridor Road should be a private toll road. I think if we could get some private roads established, we would solve the problem much more easily. But if we can't, the next best thing is to let the government do it, but do it properly, not divert the money for other purposes. Thank you.
First, let me say that I certainly agree with Professor Reisman that we can pass disastrous legislation. We have, and I'm sure we'll do it again in the future. My contention is that we can't pass and implement unconstitutional legislation. In fact, I'm sure that if the development community believes that this legislation is unconstitutional for the reasons you've raised or others have raised, it will go through the courts and a judgment will be made. Now, you may feel that the court system is somehow not an appropriate defender of the Constitution, but if that were in fact the case, I don't know who we would trust then. But I'll trust the courts to in fact make the judgment as to whether or not this particular piece of initiative should have passed is in fact constitutional. It may be disastrous, but that's a separate issue. I believe whether or not it's constitutional, the courts are an appropriate group to judge. First of all, I agree we should build roads, and I didn't mean to imply that we shouldn't. And you should know, for example, that not only have I, this debate isn't after all about my policy, but most local governments in Orange County, even those such as the City of Irvine, in fact, are building roads. The City of Irvine is building $80 million worth of roads. We have, despite the implication that somehow we don't support the construction of new roads in the county, we are in fact contributing the vast majority of the funds to the construction of the Eastern Corridor and the Foothill Corridor because of the amount of construction in Irvine. We have joined those roads and are building them. Our position on the San Joaquin Hills Corridor is one that I think as an economist you should understand. The County of Orange is planning for a road someplace between 12 and 16 lanes because they want it to carry 205,000 average daily trips, which is roughly the size of the 5 freeway, the amount of traffic the 5 freeway would carry in a few years. If you look at the toll road that's being proposed, the current amount of development planned there, independent analyses conducted by the county and by the Irvine Company suggest that with a 60-cent toll, which it would take to pay off the fees, that a 4-lane road would serve into the indefinite future, and that a 6-lane road is all you would ever need for all the plans that have been submitted to the County of Orange. So I would ask you, if that's the case, whose needs are we planning to, in fact, take care of with a 12 to 16-lane road? What is it that we're inviting? You provide the road capacity, of course you want to use it. After all, you have to pay for it by having development. And of course you will encourage yet more development. So my position on roads is build them. Find a way to fund them and build them. And that's exactly why I support this initiative. Because this initiative says that among the ways development can go forward is to have the County of Orange create road funding districts and have developers contribute to that road funding district and build the darn roads. As far as the state roads are concerned, it's always peculiar, I think, that we attribute all the ills of the road system to 8 years of Jerry Brown, who's no friend of mine. But let's at least be a bit honest here. We had 8 years before that of Ronald Reagan and 6 years since then of George McMajor. And yet the situation hasn't changed, which seems to me to lead a reasonable person to ask the question, is that because the leaders of the state of California, regardless of their ideology, pro-growth or anti-growth, I don't think you can call George McMajor or Ronald Reagan no growth, is it because they see that the needs of California are in fact different than the needs of the development community? So I agree that we should not do nothing. We should build roads. We should find ways to get them done. And I believe this initiative creates, in fact, the exact appropriate legislative environment we need to make sure that the roads get done. Because the further development of the county cannot proceed unless the road system is capitalized. If, in fact, the problem is to get the no-growth as out of state government, I believe we have them out of state government. We have legislation that allows for the construction of toll roads. We have a governor who's, in fact, going to take precious bond money and put it into transportation systems. Let's go forward with it. But I don't believe we're going to get $20 billion. And therefore, if we don't get $20 billion, we can't meet every developer's need if, in fact, we want a road system that works.
I think the debate is moving to a nice pace. You can always tell by professors referring to each other as professor. It means to get it angry. The last time frame is 3 minutes. Professor Reese.
I'm slightly confused by some of Professor Catalano's statements. First, we're told investigation shows that we will never need more than a 4 to 6 lane road for the San Joaquin Hills corridor. And then we're told, who needs this 12 lane road? The builders, and what are they going to do with it? It'll just induce a lot of additional building. So there will be people to use the road, and we have the line being created, the builders are somehow responsible for the development. It is not the builders. I'd love to be in a business where all I had to do was offer a product and somehow that made people come and buy it. The builders build products in response to demand. If they build any more than people want, they lose money and they'll go broke. If the idea is we're not going to build the road so that the developers then can't build the houses, so that the people then won't come, that's everything I'm talking about. We're attempting to keep people out who want to be here. We're attempting to keep them out by force. We're not going to allow the roads to... And look at the disingenuousness of this approach. We're being told that we have a road problem. Now we want to build the roads. No, you can't build the roads. That would solve the problem. But we're being told you can't build the roads. Why? Who'll benefit from these roads? The developers. It's not the developers, it's the people who want to buy the houses from the developers. They're the ones we're acting to keep out. And we have no right to do that.
Everyone anywhere in the country has exactly the same right to live in this beautiful place as you and I do. And we do not have the least right to keep them out for any reason. If there's an emergency, then we'll suffer the emergency. Even if we have to suffer driving through heavy traffic, we ought to do that. We have gone to war to protect freedoms. We can drive through some heavy traffic until the state can get its act together and provide the roads, and if it can't, then it should privatize the highway system. If they've reached the point where they say the problem is beyond our capacity to solve, I guarantee we will find entrepreneurs willing to solve it. They have roadways mapped out. Let's put them up for bidding. Let's get private turnpike companies in there. They will build the roads. We used to build hundreds of miles of railroad in a year. I wouldn't be surprised if we could solve this entire traffic problem in 1 or 2 years if it were turned over to private enterprise. Now, that's very radical. I don't want to mislead you or confuse you and think I'm telling you you should vote for private roads. The issue here is to stop this initiative. That's the first thing to do. don't let government ineptitude lead from one crisis to another. The government is incompetent to provide a reliable highway system as presently structured. They might if they made a super effort, but the education lobby diverts the funds. All right, we need another solution. The point is, I'm speaking to you from a philosophy which holds the taxpayer is not a milk cow. We cannot say, whatever we want to do, we'll grab the money from the taxpayer. We've reached a limit there. If the government is going to run the highway system, they've got to do it, they've got to get the money from somewhere else. If they can't do it, let them get out of the way and privatize the system. Let them not dare attempt to violate the freedom of migration. Thank you.
The system that we're being asked to build in Orange County serves the needs primarily of the as yet undeveloped area. The $20 billion road system that in fact was described by, I think, an impartial group of engineers suggests that much of that road system should go to approved areas that have already been developed and in fact were poorly served at the time they were developed. So we should be building the roads, yes. We should build them where they're needed. We should build them to give relief where, in fact, past errors have been made. And if that means not building the San Joaquin Hill Corridor at 12 lanes, but rather at 6, I think that's a reasonable thing to do, both from an ethical, as well as a political, and even from an economic point of view. As far as for what we went to war for, I think you're going to have a very difficult time convincing the American people that we went to war to protect the Irvine Company's right to develop the San Joaquin Hills. I find it paternalistic to the extreme to have you come here and tell us that on one hand we are in fact doing something terrible to the taxpayers, and on the other hand tell us that the problem has been that the people the taxpayers have elected have made decisions other than those that you like. The fact of the matter is, you either know better than they do, or they know what's best for them. I'm willing to judge now that they know best for them. Now let me also say that you've argued that in fact the real problem is that somehow those of us who are not in favor of the further doing business as it's been done in the past are no growthers, and that in fact the problem is the result of no growthers having influence in the past. That's preposterous because of course no growthers have had very little influence in the past and have very little influence now, I would suggest. But anyway, let's presume you were right. Let's presume for all the reasons you've described, because of some nefarious, fuzzy-headed governor supported by lots of no-growthers for an eight-year period, in fact, created a situation where the road system is not big enough for the current needs or felt needs of the development community. Can we not agree that, in fact, the road system is not big enough? Now we're left with an interesting situation. It's not, for whatever reasons, it isn't. Do you want people to go on building and creating a situation where, in fact, that road system is totally overwhelmed? Or should we not try to find a way to schedule demand to meet supply here? There is simply no way that we can accommodate the needs of the development community with the current road system. The initiative proposes the creation of means to, in fact, fund that system so that new development is brought online when there is capacity. It's a simple question of whether the road system should serve the people at the level they were told it was going to serve them when in fact they were built and paid for. It's a very simple proposition. Thank you.
I would like to thank both of the good professors. Let me start with a question for Dr. Reisman. If each gentleman could use the same microphone, I would appreciate that. The first question for Dr. Reisman. You commented that a lack of development would result in economic discrimination. I believe Orange County is already at that place, and I don't believe that the developers are planning any low-income housing projects. Could you respond? Let's limit our comments to about a minute.
All right, I don't think I mentioned anything about discrimination. I said that the initiative would raise the cost of housing, and I believe Dr. Catalano said the cost already is high, and that's certainly true, but that's not an arbitrary fiat of the developers. That's the result of countless delays in getting projects approved. Calculate what a 12% interest rate adds to costs when you've got hundreds of thousands of dollars tied up in the land value of a house. Calculate the building code requirements, all of the add-ons imposed by the county in terms of all kinds of amenities. Think of the land restrictions already in force thanks to the Coastal Commission zoning requirements. We could have radically reduced cost of housing by abolishing all the existing interferences. The present measure would be a continuation of government intervention. This is not the result of the builders, and let me stress again a point. We are not fundamentally dealing with the builders. The builders are middlemen. They are building houses in response to a demand. When we stop the builders, we stop the buyers from the builders. Yes, it would be proper to go to war to protect the right of the Irvine Company to produce. That is what we need to be able to have the right of the people to get what they want. The right of businesses to own their property is an essential right. It is a right worth fighting for. I would be happy to fight for it.
I think you're doing that well tonight. We appreciate it. Dr. Catalano, would you recommend that every community in the United States follow this slow growth approach? And wouldn't that lead to economic stagnation? Isn't your approach similar to that of people in every part of the country who believe factories and businesses should be built, but always somewhere else? Some people came immensely well prepared. These questions are tight.
The answer to your question is that, first of all, I don't support no-growth movements anywhere. I've never supported a no-growth movement anywhere, and I would certainly heartily support, and have consulted on many projects to try to bring capital investment to those communities in America that, in fact, need capital investment in order for them to provide the wherewithal for their citizens to, in fact, reach their aspirations. As I said before, I don't see this initiative as a no-growth initiative. I see this initiative as nothing more taking the standards that we were told years ago were going to be used when building was done in Orange County, and in fact enforcing the standards that were supposed to have been enforced. That's what this is.
I believe the next question will keep you at the podium, Professor Catalano. What about the unemployment issue involved? Isn't it true that 30 to 40,000 jobs will be lost within the first year?
My answer is no, it's not true. I don't know where those numbers come from. I've seen studies that were done by my colleague Jim Doty, in which he was asked to make a presumption that a certain dislocation would occur and then provide three scenarios. And under the worst scenario, under the presumption that you'll have a dislocation of 15% of new construction, an outcome is yielded which in fact sounds dire. I don't know what the confidence intervals around that projection are, but I do know that, in fact, the starting point, which is to presume you get this big decrease, is, in fact, not supportable by history. What I do for a living is, in fact, model economies, and one of the economies I spend a lot of time modeling is Orange County. And there's not one shred of historical evidence that, in fact, this initiative will create the kinds of dislocations that have been suggested. There just isn't a shred of evidence. In fact, I would argue that if you look historically at the decreases in the worst recession since the Great Depression in the amount of new construction, in which the construction industry in Orange County was very severely hurt beyond anything you can imagine from this initiative, the Orange County economy chugged along quite well. Secondly, the notion that in fact this initiative is going to reduce the amount of work available to people who build things is crazy. I don't know where we're going to get enough labor and bulldozers and investment to build all the roads that will in fact be wanted under this thing. There will be as much capital investment, if not more, in construction after this initiative passes, should it pass. Unless everybody decides to simply stop investing in Orange County because there are other more attractive places to invest. I don't believe that will happen.
Dr. Eastman, do you want to address that question or shall we move on?
There are a few aspects of it I'd like to touch upon. I do not insist that this initiative is a no-growth initiative, but it is definitely a slow-growth initiative, and from its own inner logic, the slower the growth, the better, the more it's supposed to improve the highway problem. Now let me tell you how I view this project, this initiative, in concrete terms. Imagine we have 10 freezing people out in Kansas who would like to come to the sunshine of Orange County. And we're telling them, no, we have slow growth. You two can come, you eight, you better wait until we decide to build enough roads, because we've been promised sufficient roads. We don't have a right to do that. They have a right to come. If the government can't build the roads, someone else should. I think the government could if it wanted to. We are not going to have more road building in Orange County as a result of this initiative. The county itself, the county administrative officer, Larry Parrish, assumes that there will be approximately $1 billion in highway funds that are in jeopardy for Orange County, $1 billion in highway and road funds. There will be less, not more. We should have more, but that should be what we're after, but this initiative is attempting to solve the problem by keeping people out.
Would you stay on the firing line for just a second more?
Sure.
Question, have not residents been paying through taxes for vital local services such as roads already? Given that the freeways and roads, just to take one example, are inadequate even for the present traffic, are you not therefore advocating a violation of individual rights if newcomers come in and further overload the infrastructure without those resources having been made larger in advance? These questions are really belie the notion that students are less literate than they used to be.
All right, is it the case that newcomers coming in are somehow depriving people who are already here of something that they have paid for? Now, this sort of problem can arise when you have government ownership. Let's just project the difference between private and government ownership. We have newcomers coming in. They need restaurants, movie theaters, barbershops, all kinds of things. Why is it that they're not in competition with people who are already here, forcing them to stay out of the movies, not get tables in restaurants, and so forth? It's very simple. When something is privately owned, operated for profit, new people coming in with money to spend to satisfy their needs represents new business, additional profit for the suppliers. They provide the supply. We are in a problem. We have the government, the monopoly supplier of the roads. The government does not have a signal. It doesn't have a financial incentive to build more roads. It can choose to let the situation go. That's what they've done. The government has chosen to have this monopoly. The burden should be on the government, not the outsiders. If that's the system that people want, we shouldn't allow one mistake, one violation of freedom, to be remedied by a second. Two wrongs don't make a right. Depriving private, taking away private ownership, preventing it in the highways, should not entitle us to remedy that problem by denying the freedom of immigration. And incidentally, let me point out that that point has not been answered in any way. We don't have an answer to the argument that we are depriving our fellow American citizens of their right to come to Orange County when we stop building, and that it's our getting a gun to protect what we've decided we have a right to.
Thank you. The next question.
Since you had a chance to respond to one of mine, I just said I didn't answer.
Please do.
The argument, see, what we've gotten ourselves into here tonight is we're no longer discussing growth versus no growth, roads versus no roads. What we are now discussing and have been moving to is the basic issue of whether, in fact, the economic system and political system for which we've opted in this country is the one we should have. What we're being told is, in fact, the courts don't work, governments don't work, that we need to reprivatize everything and create another system for judging what's constitutional and not constitutional. That's certainly not what I'm here to affect. What we discovered is that this is, in fact, the position being argued. Now, if that's what we want to debate, let's schedule another debate and debate that.
Professor Carolina, the next question is for you. While the initiative states that the board shall provide, it doesn't say how it should provide these improvements. Who will pay for them? The Orange County CAO says that the initiative will cost $1.4 billion. Who will pay? And parenthetically, why is the city of Irvine opposed to the agreements for the Foothill Circulation Plan? I guess that's a related question in terms of who will pay.
First of all, the city of Irvine is not related to those plans. It's participating in the Foothill Corridor funding system. If, in fact, the Foothill Corridor system had been, which, by the way, the county initiated and we agree with, and has not denied the county any highway funds, if that same system had been implemented in the other districts other than District 3, where former supervisors Nastandy and current supervisor Vasquez had the courage to stand up and do it in the face of enormous pressure, they did it. And had those systems been implemented elsewhere in the county, there would not be this initiative circulated and would not be on the ballot. Because what this initiative does, despite what's been contended, is to urge that a similar system be created in the other districts. If one existed, if the county created one the day after this initiative passes, should it pass, then the initiative would have been complied with. Because all the developments in the third district will, in fact, comply with this initiative.
Thank you. Well, I think we should move the...
Well, the question was who pays? Who pays, of course, are the developers who in turn charge it to the users. Now, those of you who were here arguing you should have a more libertarian system, are you going to tell me that the users of a service shouldn't pay for it? If they don't pay for it, who should? You ask them for a subsidy?
Let's now limit our questions to the ones that have been written. And moving from the very local politics to the, I think, related but very much larger question. Most of the world's great cities have higher population densities than Orange County. Why don't they have the same logistical problems as Orange County? Either of you want to take that? Professor Reisman, your opportunity.
Why don't the world's other great cities have the same logistical problems as Orange County? I think that the problems of Orange County are a great deal less even now than those of many other cities. My leading example, of course, would be New York City. I would still prefer to be on the San Diego Freeway than the Long Island Expressway or driving across 53rd Street. We have a particular problem here. We started out, we depend on the automobile. For a time, the government did an adequate job in building highways, but it then decided it had other priorities, partly in large measure as a result of a slow growth philosophy. Then also we should realize, since Proposition 13 and the GAN initiative, there's a greater competition for tax dollars, and the priority of the government has been to satisfy those needs rather than highways. That's also partly true of the Duke Mason administration. But it has started building some additional freeways. It's not the same as the Brown administration.
Professor Catalano, do you want to take on that global question?
I think the answer is yes. Most of what cities that are considered the world's great cities, I presume you mean by reputation rather than size, have transportation problems as bad, if not worse, than Orange County. That's absolutely true. I, like Professor Reisman, would prefer to be on the San Diego Freeway than the Riverside Drive in New York City. And my guess is that that's what, in fact, motivates many people to support this initiative, because they believe it's a way to avoid Manhattan. I don't believe that, in fact, there's anything in this initiative that would preclude Orange County from coming there if people want Orange County to be that. My guess is that most people in Orange County don't want it to be like Manhattan or Los Angeles for that point of view, and they will go on voting that way. And the politicians who offer an alternative closer to what they now experience will be those that are supported. Politicians which argue we should, in fact, let the market create something more like Los Angeles or New York will not be supported. Whether that's the right thing to do morally, ethically, or in fact the smart thing to do economically, I don't know. But I can tell you that under our democratic system, that's probably what will happen.
Why are no alternatives to more roads being considered? Japan has shown interest in building other forms of transportation, such as monorails and bullet trains.
Well, very briefly, one part of the answer to that would be that we still lack sufficient population density to support that kind of rail line. The population density of Orange County is now about something approaching 3,000 per square mile. In New York City, where they have a subway system, in Manhattan Island, the population density is about 70,000 per square mile, down from 100,000. You need a vastly higher population density for that sort of system. we might have a workable rail transportation system to some degree. Our railroad network in the United States has been destroyed by a combination of the Interstate Commerce Commission, which sets rates, at the same time the railway labor unions under the National Labor Relations Act and previous legislation are able to drive up wages and keep down the productivity of labor, making the railroads unprofitable. We might have an important alternative transportation source if we cleaned up the government interference in railroading.
I think the last question, Ray, did you want to take that? The last question is one that I think leaves us with a balanced opportunity for response. Please cite examples of failures or successes of no-growth initiatives. It says in California, but my reading of people's concerns would be that they would like to hear of successes and failures anywhere.
Again, this comes back to the issue of whether what's being proposed here is a standards issue or a slow or no growth issue. Some initiatives that have been passed around the country and in California are literally no growth, where they actually set a cap number of new units that can be added every year. They cite that there's a lack of water, or that there's a lack of schools, or a lack of another critical public service that cannot serve more than 500 new units a year. And as long as they can demonstrate that the local voters are unwilling to tax themselves more heavily to in fact provide those things, that's a legal option. Those have a mixed result. I mean, they're very popular in the communities where they passed. In fact, in Colorado, in Boulder, even the real estate community supports it, I think, for obvious reasons. So where they're passed, for the most part, they have been popular, but you have to understand that's a function of selection. What happens is that the people who are there, the people who stay, like it, and the people who don't like it, leave, or don't come. So there's a sort of natural selection process whereby the communities that get them tend to like them. Are they successful? You know, I think you have to ask that question on a sort of absolute scale. Are those initiatives creating communities that we believe live up to the ideal of the American community? I think those communities which say 500 and no more for the indefinite future, by my values, aren't successful communities. They really are enclaves for very few people who want to use, and I don't want to argue Professor Reisman's argument here, but they want to use, of course, the public sector to protect their interests. But you see, for the entire history of local government in this country, that's what's happened. Local government is used to protect the interests of whoever can control local government. For the most part, development interests have controlled local government. The real issue in Orange County, the real issue why we're here tonight, why there's so much money and so much interest in this initiative, isn't building. Because as much building is going to go on afterwards before, it'll take longer, but as much building will go on. The real issue here is the transition of power. There's a concern that, in fact, county government, which for an extended period of time in Orange County has been the handmaiden and an extension of the development community, will no longer be that, because this is the bellwether of a change in political power. Now, once political power shifts, and in fact goes to the hands of those people who don't want as much change in Orange County won't change as much. I'm sure that's true. Will that mean Orange County is a better community or a worse community? I think that very much depends on your values. It depends mine that it would become exclusionary, that it would be there to serve only the interests of the well-heeled few. But on the other hand, what are we to do? Are we to change our underlying democratic system to deny the population the right to, in fact, express its will through the political democratic institutions in this country? Those institutions gave power to the development community for decades, and now they may, it's not clear that they will, they may, in fact, yield power to a larger number of people in Orange County. Is that good or is that bad? I leave that for you to judge, but that, in fact, is a function of our system.
Dr. Reisman, do you want to use that question as a means of making a final philosophical statement?
Dr. Catalano has made several references, I believe, to the notion that the public will get the system it wants and we should have whatever the public wants to have.
That's not what I said.
That's close. All right, and you've indicated that this really is a debate over fundamental political philosophies, what system should we have? It is more than an issue than the initiative. That's perfectly correct. Let me try to put it this way. I do not think that you can properly argue for an unlimited democratic system. That comes as a shock, I'm sure, but let me explain why, and I think you'll agree with me. If we had three men on a desert island and two of them were hungry, they would not have the right to vote to cook and eat the third. A lynch mob, think of the democracy in a lynch mob. Lynch mob, 99. Victim, 1. You could have the entire population of the earth believing something and one individual alone disagrees. The entire population of the world does not have the right to force that one to change his convictions. The majority does not have the right to violate the individual rights of the minority. That includes, it does not have the right to tell him where to live, what to believe, whom to marry, or, I will also say, to pick his pocket under the income tax. But that's a separate issue. The people of Orange County may decide anything. There was a majority that elected Hitler, even. Not that this measure compares with that. But this measure is a violation of fundamental freedoms. It is economically destructive. The majority may vote for it. Majorities can be self-destructive. We should have democratic voting in a context where what the majority can vote on is not the disposition of other people's lives and properties. We should have majority voting in the context of limited government. The majority should vote for who should appoint the chief of police. Who should appoint the officers of the army? What's the best way to protect individual rights? But not how to determine other people's lives, where they'll live or what they'll do.
Thank you very much,
our great problem is that we've forgotten that.